Jeff, good to see you. We last met in Italy in September. It's a completely different market since then. You know, the gold price now at 2,400. In September, it was right in the throes of the bear market. How do you see the gold price at the moment? Just, I mean, I know you're not on a daily basis looking at it, but what does it feel like apart from good?
Well, it definitely feels good, I can assure you on that. But no, look, I mean, I'm not an expert in this, I'd have to say. I mean, however, I guess I've been feeling for some time that there's been a lot of things going on out in the world that were probably going to be pushing the gold price higher at some particular point in time, and it has occurred in recent times. I mean, it's very difficult to be too clever about this because I think, you know, if you went back 10 years or so ago, there were a lot of metrics there and they were linked, and I think a lot of those linkages seem to have broken down now, so precisely what drives the gold price, I'm blessed if I know. But, you know, I think there is certainly concern out there about the state of security and about the state of the economy, global economies. And those are things that all seem to point to higher gold for precious metals prices.
Do you think as a CEO of a gold company that you need to be kind of a believer in gold and kind of a believer in the kind of sound money theorem? Or is it just another commodity that you happen to have got a lot of experience in?
Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, what drives our business is producing gold at the lowest possible cost. And we do it on the basis that we want to be in business no matter what the price is.
But you could be producing widgets.
We could be, except that I guess we have a level of experience and expertise in gold. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a gold nut per se. I mean, I like the fact that it's got a pretty colour and it's heavy and what have you. But no, it could be anything, I guess.
But you have, I mean, you have been in gold a long time.
Well, I have been in gold, and I've also been in polymetallics and been in coal and things like that over the years. But certainly most of my career has been in the gold industry. Yeah, that's true.
And, I mean, I've been in the sector for about 30 years, and I've lived through the times when the gold price was down at $250 an ounce. And there are times when all of the gold companies are trading at a kind of a discount, and all of the gold companies are trading at a kind of a premium. Almost every CEO will say that their gold company is trading at a discount to its peers. Are you undervalued relative to your peers?
Oh, I'd absolutely say. Of course we are.
but what metrics do you look at? I mean, let's break that down a bit, because if you always trade at a discount to your peers, it would suggest that you're actually doing something wrong.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's the thing that concerns me, because people who do focus on metrics alone would draw that conclusion. Yeah. They would say, if you work out things like, you know, price to NAV, cash flow to NAV, these sorts of things, and you'd see that that we are lower than our peers, you'd say the markets, they were wrong. These guys must be doing something wrong.
Yeah, that's a discount for a reason.
That would be the conclusion. But then when you dive into it a little bit further, you know, people also say, oh, no, well, that relates to the fact that all of your operations are in Africa and there's an African discount. And I think there is an African discount. But, you know, there's also other things as well. So I'm told that investors value a number of things. One is, say, they like scale of the company. Two is they like asset quality. Three, they want to see growth. Four, they want to see cash flow. Five, they want management, quality management. Now, if I look at Perseus and do a self-appraisal against all of those things, I would say, well, on the scale front, we are getting bigger. We're now the third largest listed gold producer on the Australian Stock Exchange and arguably 14 or 15 in the world, depending on who's included in the list. So we are getting to be reasonably relevant in terms of the global industry. And I'll come back to asset quality, but certainly we have very strong cash flows. We have very good growth prospects, given that we've recently acquired the Northern Saga project, we acquired Orca Gold a few years ago, et cetera, et cetera. And I would argue that also that our management team is pretty darn good, and our workforce is very good, and our board's good. So we tick a lot of boxes. Now, on the area of asset quality, I think that the criticism that was levelled at us some time ago, in other words, oh, you've got short life assets, low grade, short life. It was true. It was true. However, in recent times, in response to that, we have acquired two more projects. Both of those projects have potential lives of 10 to 15 years, closer to 15 than 10. And so progressively we are upgrading the quality of our asset portfolio. So at this stage we have a pencil tick in that box. Yeah. We soon want it to be a very dark, you know, black tick, so that all of the things that investors are looking for, we can deliver.
I mean, in your interview with Matt that you've done recently, you were talking about the exploration you've done around your own operations, kind of the reserve replacement, resource replacement. Mm-hmm. When I, in preparation for this, I was looking at your presentation, and I saw kind of Sissingué's got a 3-year mine life, and Edikan's got a 5-year mine life, and Diarra plus 10 or possibly plus 12. And then I thought, well, hang on, you did that deal on Yaouré, and then there's the Orca deal, and now the Nyanzaga. It made me think, well, perhaps they don't do exploration. Perhaps these are just operators.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a couple of things to say about that. Those life expectancies, if you will, are based on JORC compliant ore reserves as at June last year. What they don't take into account is the resources that are there, and the potential conversion of those resources into reserves. And that, I think, is what we've demonstrated over the last 5 years, that we're not bad at doing that, converting resources into reserves. So, in fact, we have, I think, in practice, longer life of those particular assets. And, in fact, you know, what we've done at Edikan, for instance, I've talked to our workforce over there and asked them to embrace a vision where we actually have 10 more years of life.
Yeah.
Rather than the 5 that's stated in the reserve situation at the moment. And we will do that through a number of means. One is we'll continue exploration on newly acquired tenements. Two is we'll manage our costs such that we won't suffer inflation in costs, which means that we can perhaps process lower grade ore going forward.
Yep.
Three is we can go back and evaluate some of the decisions that we took early in the life of that project. Bear in mind that the Edikan project's been running since 2012. And in the early years, we were doing pit designs based on $1,100 gold, $1,200 or $1,500 is the case for me. So I think we can go back and revisit some of those decisions and say, well, what would it look like actually if we used $1,700 an ounce as our price for our designs? It might mean that we can actually do a pushback of this pit or that one and extend the life. So I'm very optimistic that we will be able to extend the life of the Edikan mine and the Sissingué mine. Of course, the Yaouré will definitely be extended given the, you know, the exploration potential there is there. But, you know, and talking to the workforce about this, everybody's on the same page here, because as a company, we want to extend the life. As an employer and a provider for their families, they want to keep their jobs for longer.
Yeah.
So we're all similarly motivated to try and push the life of those assets out. So that's the growth through organic means, and then of course we have the inorganic growth opportunity that comes through judicious acquisitions from time to time when the opportunities there.
Well, if it's okay, let's talk about Nyanzaga. I've known Matt for over 10 years, and when he first told me about the Nyanzaga ore body and how the deposit, how he went through that selection process, I mean, this was a long time ago. He reviewed hundreds of projects, and he settled on that one. And here we are, kind of 10, 12 years later. You've got a production timeline for a couple of years' time. Also in the interview you did with Matt, you said you didn't... I'm not sure if it was in the interview or the conversation around it. You talked about the level of due diligence that you'd done, that there was some more that you wanted to do. Where are you in that understanding of the Nyanzaga ore body?
Oh, well, our understanding of the ore body is reasonably good, actually. The technical due diligence was done very well, I think, by our team. The due diligence I was referring to there were more commercial, legal kind of things.
Right.
And that referred to the fact that, you know, going back a few years in Tanzania, there was some material changes in legislation and things of that nature, and we needed to understand precisely what the rules were going forward. So that was the area of uncertainty on the due diligence, which we've since addressed. In terms of the understanding of the ore body, I mean, we believe, for instance, that OreCorp's development plan, while it was well suited to their needs, didn't necessarily give you know, optimize the use of that resource. We believe that by taking a different approach, we can extract more from that than what OreCorp was considering.
And is that principally that a small company will try to develop it on the most kind of least upfront cost possible and then do things in stages, but you with a bigger balance sheet could perhaps take a kind of more holistic approach to the project?
Yeah, like, you know, there are variances exactly to what you just said, but in principle, yes, that's right. So, you know, a smaller company will design in order to be able to attract financing of a particular type, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And we can take a different approach to the whole thing. But, you know, it's actually, and that is what should happen in a sense, because this is a scarce resource that belongs to the people of Tanzania. And they deserve to have it, you know, developed to the full extent, yeah, and they get the benefits from it. So, you know, we have a very clear vested interest in producing more gold from that deposit. And, of course, our stakeholders benefit at the same time. So everybody's similarly aligned on that.
So what are the next couple of years to production look like? You know, what are the... I mean, it's a short timeline for a big project.
Yeah,
in terms of studies and kind of engineering design and construction.
Absolutely. But bear in mind, we're not starting from point zero here.
No.
You know, OreCorp have done a lot of work over time and a lot of good work, I might add. So we're not criticising that in the slightest. They've done some good work and we'll be building on that. But what we'll do is there are three programs that we're going to run simultaneously. One is we're going to continue and finalise the program for relocation and compensation of landowners. So that process is underway. That needs to be completed ASAP. The second thing that we want to do is to carry out a drilling program where we convert inferred resources into measured and indicators such that we can put them into the mine plan. And I think that there is opportunity for doing that because you know, OreCorp drilled in certain places, but they didn't drill in other places.
Yeah.
We can do that drilling and we can, you know, pick up the size of the ore body.
Sorry, just on that, because I think they had a mine plan of 12 or 15 years already. I mean, are you looking to add, to start off with a longer mine plan?
Yeah, well, we will do that, I think. And not only that, we'll process more ore per year as well. So we are looking at expanding the reserve and the life and the amount of gold that's produced from the property. So that is important. Now, in order to be able to do that, we need to do front-end engineering and design. So that means, like, take the DFS kind of work and then take it to the next stage where we know absolutely what we're going to build and exactly how much it's going to cost.
Are you changing the throughput?
Yes, we believe we will, yes. I mean, we've done, through our own internal due diligence, we believe that an upscaling of the plant is the right way to go there. Now, the work over the next 9 months or so, April, you know, it's going to be taking, you know, eight months to do front-end engineering and design. And we'll be looking very carefully at exactly what the size is and things like that. And bear in mind that this is not our first rodeo, so to speak. I mean, we have done it before and we do sort of understand, you know, how scale works and things like that. And not only that, we've worked with Lycopodium, the engineering group, on several occasions, and we understand how they work as well, and they understand how we work. So I think we're well advanced down the path of doing this extra work, and I think we'll get to a landing fairly quickly as to what the new project should look like. And it's an important point because we don't want to drag this process out any more than we absolutely have to, for a couple of reasons. One is we want to get into the development and to have the production available to us when some of the other mines are starting to decline. But secondly, also, the government of Tanzania has made it very clear that they want this project developed as well. And so, you know, with that thought in mind, we need to move things along as quickly as we can, bearing in mind that taking shortcuts here is not going to be helpful. And we won't be taking shortcuts. We'll do the work that needs to be done and we'll come up with a really good project. And in fact, I think, I'm not a betting person, but I'm prepared to say that I think that Nyanzaga could be a lot better than people actually expect it to be, just in the same way that when we bought Yaouré through Amara, there were a lot of naysayers out there who said, oh, this won't be much good. Well, you know, I can say, look at the scoreboard, folks, and see what's happened. I think that, you know, 10 years down the track, we might be saying the same thing about Nyanzaga.
And in the presentation, you talk about a kind of a potential capital cost of being $450 to $500 million. Mm-hmm. And is that based on the DFS? Because from what it sounds like, you're not going to rewrite the DFS. You're just going to kind of optimize it.
Yeah, that's right. No, what that is actually based on is that when we did due diligence, we did a preliminary design ourselves. When it was a very bottom-up exercise that we did. And we estimated what the cost of that would be. So as it turns out, we're looking at spending similar amounts of money to Hawkcorp, just spending it on different things.
Okay.
They were looking at having an underground mining operation. We're looking at having an open pit, a larger scale processing. Now, what is the correct number? Well, we'll find that out in due course. When we did our estimates a couple of years ago, it was at a time where there was peak concern around inflation and capital costs.
Yeah.
And we don't have any evidence of the hard evidence of this as yet. But anecdotally, I think some of our estimates might have been a bit heavy-handed. You know, in those days, we were very worried about the steel costs and the supply of steel. We were very worried about freight costs. We were very worried about labour costs and things of that nature. Now, you know, hopefully we will find that, in fact, some of those things are not quite as bad as we thought. And that 450 to 500 million might be 400 to 450. If it's 500, that's okay. We've got enough money to pay for it on the balance sheet today. But, you know, obviously, if we can spend less, then that's a plus as well.
Good. Well, I look forward to seeing Nanzaga develop. For shareholders or any interested party and watcher, what do you see as kind of being the key points for Perseus this year? You know, what should we look out for to see that you're on track or beating expectations?
Oh dear. Well, I mean, you know, we'll progressively keep the market informed and progress on those three programs, as it were. But
no, not just in Nyanzaga, but
I see outside. Yeah. Well, goodness me. Yes. Look, I mean, we are doing quite a lot of exploration work, obviously, around the mines and it's certainly up in Sudan as well. We're going to start drilling up there again, so there'll be results come through from there. We've also, as you're aware, recently entered into a cooperation agreement with Ajlan Brothers, the mining division of a very large Saudi conglomerate. And you know, I'd like to think that over the next few months there'll be some news coming from that particular arrangement as well, whether it's that we've decided to pursue particular opportunities or whatever the case happens to be. But I think we're very excited about that venture, because it's an agreement to cooperate on both the Arabian and the Nubian shields. And as people, you know, who've been in this business know, that geologically speaking, those areas are amazingly prolific, and they haven't been explored very well over time because the geopolitics has been fairly dubious.
Yeah.
Now, I think if Perseus was to consider doing work there on our own, we would take a particular view. However, working in conjunction with a well-respected Saudi family, that gives us a level of confidence that we might be able to have a different relationship with people, etc. And more importantly, perhaps a better understanding of the mindset and culture of those host countries.
And in that list of countries, I saw that you put in that statement, you included Sudan.
Hmm.
Are they helping in Sudan? And tell us a bit about that, because, I mean, that all looks quite tricky.
Well, no, certainly Sudan is one of the countries that they are very interested in.
Yeah.
And you know, we obviously have the Meyas Sand project there that we own 70% of. The government owns 20% and a local company owns 10%. Now, it may well be that our partners join with us in the development of that project. And, you know, time will tell whether that occurs or not. But you can sort of see the industrial logic in doing that, because for Perseus' perspective, it reduces our exposure to the country. But more importantly, having a partner who is, you know, well respected, you know, in a geopolitical sense, may well mean that the development of that project is easier to achieve than might otherwise be the case. So, look, there's all sorts of different ways of looking at these things, but we're looking forward to working with the Ajlan team. I mean, to date, we've had a number of very encouraging discussions. We've looked at, you know, different things, and in fact, actually, our exploration teams are getting together in the next week or two to go and visit a number of properties. So what's
in this? Saudi? Or
well, Saudi and elsewhere. Watch this space, is I think what we say there.
Because there's been this huge push in Saudi, hasn't there, to open up and diversify the economy away from oil. And
yes, indeed it has. I mean, you know, there is a very, very major, in my opinion, at least, very major shift going on in terms of geopolitics around the world and certainly in the region where we're talking about, you know, off the sides of the Middle East there. And the Saudis have a very clear strategy, you know, vision for 2030, basically, where the mining becomes a material part of the Saudi economy. And in order to do that, they need to build infrastructure, which they're doing, but also, too, to gain access to supplies of, you know, mineralization minerals to put through their plants and the like. And so the government has you know, strongly encouraged companies like Ajlan to invest in mining properties. Of course, you know, they're not by history mining people, but we are. So by putting together a group like Ajlan with a group like Perseus, we bring together a whole lot of attributes that are important to developing projects. We bring, you know, a lot of experience and a lot of capability with our team. They bring money and ambition and geopolitical air cover, so to speak. So between the two of us, this could be a case of, you know, two and two equals probably six rather than even five or four.
I'm fighting talk. That's good. Good to hear. Great. And from the existing mines in West Africa, just keep an eye on the delivery, the execution.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's a key part. I mean, honestly, all of the other things we've talked about are the, you know, are peripheral. If we don't operate, if we don't deliver according to plan, then all of the rest of it becomes somewhat academic. So, you know, the focus on the operations does not change from where it's been over the last 5 years. We're driving hard every day, produce as much gold as you can at the lowest possible cost, and do that day in, day out, and deliver on our promises. That is central to our business.
Jeff, thank you so much. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay.